Sometimes when you do things long enough, you have the opportunity to observe micro trends and macro trends. So the Source blog, I've been doing that for 4 years, and the podcast is coming up on a 2-year anniversary. It actually might be a 2-year anniversary by the time you listen to this. Doing this experiment has exposed me to a lot of information, and that information metabolizes into podcast episodes. Sometimes I observe a trend for a couple of weeks, and I talk about that. And lately, because I've been doing this for 2 years, I'm starting to observe longer-term trends. Since the beginning of the Sourcecast podcast, one of my primary focuses has always been on mergers and acquisitions. And I mentioned this 2 weeks ago. The reason why I focus on mergers and acquisitions is so you, the listener, and myself, from a procurement perspective, can understand where suppliers are spending their money. And one of the macro trends over the last 2 years that I have observed is that there is a significant amount of merger and acquisitions activity in Israel. And I was not quick on the uptake on this particular trend. It took a while for me to start to observe it and realize that it was a trend. And then I took the obvious next step and started to wonder why Israel is such a hotbed for acquisition. So this week, we're talking about Israel from an M&A perspective. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast episode 90. Since we are spending an entire episode on Israeli mergers and acquisitions, we're going to bring back the acquisition section for a week. I know you guys were missing the girl from Ipanema. Apple quietly acquired a company called Regained. They never seemed to actually announce acquisitions at the time of the acquisition. Regained was a small company that worked on a computer vision API to analyze the content of photos. This next acquisition is a follow-up to a podcast from a few months ago when we discussed the meltdown of Toshiba's chip-making unit. Well, it seems that the company has finally agreed to a $17.8 billion deal. If you recall, the Japanese government was very hesitant to see Toshiba or their chip-making unit fall into the hands of China. So a conglomeration of companies formed, led by Bain Capital, to purchase the Toshiba unit. This conglomeration of companies formed under the name Pangea, but again, it is mostly led by Bain. Other investors are Seagate Technology, Kingston, Apple, and Dell Technologies. All of those companies pitched in about $3.7 billion. Amazon acquired a company, this time 3D body model startup, Body Labs. The company was rumored to be acquired for anywhere between $50 to $70 million. Microsoft acquired a social virtual reality application called AltSpace VR. The virtual reality social networking application allows users across headsets and web platforms to join 3D chat rooms, watch videos, and attend events. Considering the amount of time and energy that Microsoft is investing in 3D, this makes a lot of sense. And finally, IBM. They are set to acquire Sydney-based digital consulting firm, Vivint. Vivint uses technology, data, and behavioral science to assist clients in coming up with business strategies, and the acquisition is thus meant to bolster the digital transformation agency of IBM that we haven't heard about lately. But remember, this unit was formed when IBM basically acquired 4 marketing agencies in the span of 3 weeks. I'm not kidding, it was 3 weeks. Just when you think IBM's getting quiet, they run out and buy another marketing company. On to our main story. Israel. I will admit that I have been sort of fascinated with Israeli startup culture for a while. I had a friend who worked for Israeli company Soda Club. I think they go by a different name now. They used to be called Soda Club, but now I think they're Soda Stream, but that's irrelevant. I remember my friend working for Soda Club. There was always interesting stories about the culture and the amount of work they put into things, and he always told me that it was an extremely bare-bones operation. Their domestic footprint was like a handful of people. And most of the IT was controlled back at the main headquarters in Israel. So as I mentioned in the open, Israel seems to be a hotbed for mergers and acquisitions over the last few years. And as I started to notice these acquisitions, I started to wonder why. And as you're listening to this, you're probably saying, it's clearly the Israeli military. But it goes so much deeper than just, oh, it's the military. First and foremost, it's the Israeli government that is creating an atmosphere of innovation. And it starts at the high school level. You may or may not know that most people are required to join the army after high school in Israel. The important takeaway for this particular piece of information is high school students, they are gaining early exposure to extremely advanced technology and sometimes developing high-tech communications and defense systems, again, at a very early age. To provide another example of how the government is investing in their country and providing a spirit of innovation, the Israeli government in the 1990s created a fund worth over $220 million to invest in promising Israeli startups, and they partnered with American and European investors, which was probably the genesis of the investment opportunities, but they had long-term strategic thinking in the technology area. So the country is thinking long-term, they're thinking ahead, they're investing in technology, and they're investing in the youth of the country. The unifying theme in this story is the Israeli army. Specifically, Army Unit 8200. The 8200 unit scouts the nation's high schools to identify high potential candidates at an early age. They specifically target students with superior analytical skills who can make quick decisions and work well in team environments. Another interesting aspect of the 8200 is that the technologists work directly with their quote-unquote customers, their intelligence officers. All of the unit's technology systems, from analytics to data mining to interception and intelligence management, are designed and built in-house. Technologists sit side by side with their users on a daily basis to ensure that their products meet the intelligence officers' specific requirements. The reason why I'm sharing this specific information with you is this 8200 unit clearly has an agile approach to their development methodology, and they are crafting critical startup skills and experience even before they start their first company. Here's an audio clip from a recent Vice news story about the 8200 and Israel's recruiting efforts of top-tier talent.
But why is it that the Israelis are so good at cybersecurity?
Well, I think it started a long time ago. If you are the military intelligence, from very early point, they got the permission to select from the, you know, thousands and thousands of teens, and you offer them to play a very unique game, a game that they can play only in Israel, only in military intelligence. They won't be able to play any other place in the world. The game is this. You get at least 3 years of innovation summer camp, continuous innovation summer camp, to come up with a solution that would save the country.
To give you an even better picture of what the 8200 unit has produced, here are the companies that have been founded by 8200 alumni. Argus Cybersecurity, Palo Alto Networks, NSO, CyberArk, Imperva, Checkpoint Software, Radware, BioCatch, Sequoia Capital, and Waze, you know that map and directions application that your parents love to use? Yeah, an Israeli company with alumni from the 8200 created that company, which is now owned by Google. Google founder Eric Schmidt, who is now the executive chairman of Google's parent company Alphabet, said Israel was punching far above its weight in regards to technology. And I quote, "Israel has a super role in technology innovation. I can't think of a place where you could see this diversity and collection of initiatives aside from Silicon Valley." This is a pretty strong statement. Another element to Israel's, I'll call it their special sauce, is unfortunately, the people of Israel have to work under difficult conditions.
The deployment of your solution could be very quick because we need to decrypt the Iranian code because they are threatening us with nuclear weapon or the possibility of nuclear weapon. We need to hack into the computer of that jihadist because he's planning the next suicide bombing. That's a great responsibility.
One software engineer summarizes the situation far better than I could, and I quote, "I will always remember pulling my car over, running into a ditch, and watching three rockets get shot out of the sky. This was not a movie. It was part of my commute to work. After the rockets were shot down, everybody, and I'm talking about an entire highway's worth of cars during rush hour, dusted themselves off, got in their cars, and went to work." I really don't have a desire to add commentary to that statement, but clearly there is a different culture and it breeds a different type of work ethic. There's a certain level of practicality to the applications that are being designed in Israel. You're not seeing applications to take pictures of your dogs or to put smiley faces and googly eyes on your kids. The solutions that the Israeli startup scene is trying to solve for is much more practical, it impacts everyday life, and it makes a lot of sense that they're attracting investment from U.S. companies. Here's a rundown, just going through my archives, of the Israeli acquisitions that have taken place by certain companies. Apple purchased Anobit for $400 million. Facebook purchased a company called Saludo for $130 million. Facebook also purchased Face.com, which is facial recognition, for $100 million. HPE purchased Context Extreme. As I mentioned before, Google purchased Waze for $1 billion. IBM purchased companies EasySource and Cloudigo. Microsoft recently purchased Cloudin. Here's an interesting fact. USB thumb drives were invented in Israel. And that memory and chipset focus leads to the most interesting investment. And I covered this on the podcast before. Intel is investing a ton of money in Israel. Not only did they invest $6 billion for a semiconductor hub, but they also recently purchased Mobileye for $15.3 billion. And there's at least another dozen acquisitions that I could review, but I think you get the point. Israel continues to invest in and create startups thanks to its engineering talent, capital, and investments from U.S. tech giants like Microsoft and Google, and obviously Intel. To me, the most interesting trend is, even with the potential political conflicts in Israel and some of the difficulties the Israeli people have to face, you're starting to see companies like Intel invest money in infrastructure in Israel. They're not taking their ideas and moving them out of the country. And I think the country is going to develop enough talent in marketing and sales that some of the softer skills will also be able to operate out of the country. Analysts are also predicting that the high value in the security firms of Israel will decline. They're expecting that sub-bubble to burst. But when that happens, there's going to be more focus and emphasis on the other technological areas that Israel is excelling in, like microprocessing units, storage, semiconductors. You know I like to talk about Infinidat on the podcast. So to answer my initial question of why Israel excels in mergers and acquisitions and technology at the moment, it really comes down to a government that's willing to invest in their people, a military that acts as a secondary educational hub, and a startup incubator. Whether that was by design or happened by accident, the results speak for themselves. Culturally, the people of Israel also take some of the difficulties that they face in their day-to-day lives and use it to make practical products that the world can use. So you can remember episode 90, because every time I discuss an Israeli acquisition in my M&A section on the podcast, I'm going to refer to episode 90 of Sourcecast.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.